The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. It's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling celiac disease with guest expert Dr. Dennis Feldman, from the Florida Medical Clinic in North Tampa and Land O'Lakes. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And as mentioned, today's topic is celiac disease, and I have a short little story to share with y'all. As you know, in March of every year, we have a big symposium, 1,800 women, just a few months ago, at our fourth annual. And for whatever reason, I was approached by not one, but at least two different independent women about celiac disease, family members having celiac disease and having difficulty managing celiac disease, and what could I do, what could Focus on Females do about that? Well, at that point, I promised them that we will have this summer a show, on a radio show, an entire show dedicated to celiac disease. And here we have it today. I share this story with you to encourage each and every one of you out there that are wrestling with some medical problem or healthcare disease to either call my office or, better yet, go to our website and email me the topic that you're interested in that we should cover for you and your family. We will do so. We will schedule an expert on that disease and have a radio show so you can talk live to an expert and have questions answered and help you navigate through the management of this this problem, whatever it may be within the healthcare arena. So today, celiac disease, guest expert Dr. Dennis Feldman. Dennis, great to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Dennis Feldman has been in the practice of gastroenterology in the Tampa Bay area over the past 25 years. He is currently a member of the Florida Medical Clinic with offices in North Tampa and Land O'Lakes, Florida. He is board certified by the American College of Physicians in internal medicine and gastroenterology. He is an active member of the American College of Gastroenterology and the American Society for Gastrointestinal Endoscopy. Dr. Feldman's clinical interests include celiac disease, colon cancer screening, inflammatory bowel disease, biliary tract, and liver disease, and endoscopic procedures, including endoscopy and colonoscopy. Dennis was born in New Jersey, attended college at Colgate University, and graduated from the George Washington University Medical School. He then completed his internship, residency, and gastroenterology fellowship at the University of South Florida. And when not taking care of patients, he enjoys road biking, master swimming, and snow skiing. And I guess you head north for the snow skiing part of that.
Certainly a few times in the winter.
Excellent. Well, Dennis, again, our focus today is on celiac disease. And for those patients, those individuals out there listening, some of them know celiac disease because they are dealing with it on a daily basis. But for those listeners that don't understand or don't know what celiac disease is, maybe we should give a little overview of that.
Well, celiac disease is a disease that affects multiple organs of the body, but the disease starts in the small intestine. And through some sort of curious reaction, an exposure to wheat in patients that are predisposed to this illness causes their small intestine to become diseased. The small intestine is a 20-foot length organ that's like a hose, and it has multiple absorptive surfaces called villi, which are finger-like projections in the small intestine. These villi are covered with cuboidal cells called epithelial cells. And in a patient with celiac disease, for reasons we don't understand, when these patients eat wheat, there's a protein in the wheat called gliadin, or gluten, that results in a irritation of the small intestine and an inflammatory reaction. Now, this reaction varies in severity, such that some patients have very mild symptoms, and other patients have very extreme symptoms.
And what would the classic symptoms of celiac disease be for an individual?
Well, in a patient that has the more classic form of the illness, where it is more severe and we can recognize it more easily, the patient will present with weight loss, diarrhea, symptoms of malnutrition, including weight loss, iron deficiency, anemia, loss of protein status, and a general feeling of malaise and fatigue.
So I might remind everybody out there, again, our phone numbers for calling with questions is 289-1860, 289-1860, toll free outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. And so for those women or men that, in fact, is there a male-female predominance or variation between genders?
I would say so. Now, the illness does occur in both men and women, and traditionally, when I was in medical school, we were taught that it affected mostly Caucasians of Western European background. But when our sensitivity for testing for milder cases of the disease occurred over time, we realized that this illness is much more common than we previously recognized. The incidence of the illness is probably about 1 in 1,000, and it does have a predisposition for women, like all autoimmune diseases.
Okay. And so for someone who does not have a diagnosis of celiac disease, at what point should they consider or go to a doctor with symptoms like chronic diarrhea? At what point should they see their doctor to have an evaluation which may include a diagnosis of celiac disease?
Well, I think that the cases where the patients have the more significant symptoms, it's easy to tell those people to go see a doctor. They'll have unexplained weight loss, diarrhea, and maybe they've had a refractory case of iron deficiency anemia in that they've taken iron tablets prescribed by a physician or healthcare provider, and they remain iron deficient. Now, we now know that even milder cases of celiac disease occur, in which patients may just have gas, bloating, a slight increase in stool frequency, and possibly a mild case of iron deficiency anemia. Now, if these cases are not recognized because they don't have a predominance of diarrheal or intestinal symptoms, some of those patients can go on to develop more chronic problems like collagen vascular disease, like Graves' disease of the thyroid, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, type 1 diabetes mellitus, and autoimmune hepatitis.
Well, this is very significant because a lot of middle-aged or even younger women, of course, can get anemia, and it's often ascribed to their heavy menstrual period, and they may have bloating, and without the diarrhea component, it may not even be considered that they may have an intestinal problem.
Yeah, that's very true. It's always a more complex situation in young women who are having children, having menstrual periods, have a lot of very common reasons for iron deficiency anemia. And some of these people, unfortunately, get lost in the sauce. They take the iron tablets and they just assume that because they're having heavy menstrual periods, that's why they're remaining with iron deficiency anemia. But in reality, the absorptive surface of their small intestine is not absorbing iron in a normal fashion, and they can go on for several years with iron deficiency anemia. And then, ironically, when they're postmenopausal, they remain iron deficient, mm-hmm. and that's unexplainable. Unfortunately, some of these people, even with milder cases, can go into later years of life with iron deficiency anemia and a more aggressive form of osteoporosis than the regular patient, the woman who normally will develop some osteoporosis.
Just due to the postmenopausal hormone deficiency.
Well, in actuality, what's happening mm-hmm. is that they actually have a more accelerated form of bone disease because they're not absorbing a lot of the micronutrients that are necessary for normal bone development.
The fat-soluble vitamin D, I imagine.
Right, vitamin D, calcium, and the protein absorption that is involved in bone growth. Mm-hmm. So not only do they develop osteopenia and osteoporosis, but they also develop a separate condition called osteomalacia, where there's actually malabsorption of vitamin D, mm-hmm. and that is almost, well, it's having two bone diseases simultaneously.
Well, it basically underscores the necessity to identify what's going on in that particular patient's case and not attribute it to other, you know, to basically other causes. If the patient has an underlying malabsorptive problem causing the iron deficiency anemia and the bloating, then we really need to identify what's going on.
That's true.
I remember in medical school, or way back when, prehistoric, that celiac disease we often thought of as a younger person's disease, in fact a pediatric disease. But now I guess you can even be diagnosed with celiac disease in middle life, and you may have had it for a long period of time, but it had not progressed to the point where the symptoms perhaps made it clear what was going on. So are you seeing more patients that are first diagnosed with celiac disease in their, say, the third decade of life?
Yes. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that when we originally were taught about celiac disease, we really only ascribed it to the most severe cases, children that were low weight, birth, very failure to thrive patients, young teenagers with extreme diarrhea. We didn't realize that there was a lesser clinical form of it that progressed throughout life. Additionally, the irony of medicine is that pediatricians would often put certain patients on restrictive diets at a young age until they became more developed and mature. And those patients, some of them had forms of celiac disease that were basically put in remission until they became older and then in their 20s and 30s present with these symptoms once again.
So they were put on these diets without having a concrete diagnosis of celiac disease.
That's true.
And so it wasn't recognized until later on when, I guess, it became clearer that celiac disease is a major cause of these symptoms, and doctors re-looked at these cases.
Now, well, the other thing that arose was that people studied these people in medical schools. A lot of research was done, and we developed whole new serologies to detect antibodies that go along with the diagnosis of celiac disease.
And on that note, we'll be right back with more on celiac disease with guest expert Dr. Dennis Feldman on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call with your questions, 289-1860. Now's your chance, 289-1860. See you soon.
Talk Radio, 860 WGUL.
Mary, I've been having trouble finding a good young adult book for Ashley. What is your Jessica reading?
I just gave Jess a new book, Montooth and the Canfield Witch, and she has not been able to put it down.
What's it about?
The main characters are a group of teens led by Cardi, a real tomboy. They stumble across the house of an old woman the town believes is a witch. A small group of nasty treasure hunters is planning to attack the so-called witch, and Cardi and her friends stumble right into the middle.
Wait, a witch? Are you sure this is okay?
Really, it's okay. I sneaked a peek before I gave it to Jess, so I know this is exactly the kind of book I want her reading. She's already looking forward to the sequel.
Now, what about bad language? Is there anything inappropriate I'd have to screen?
No, no bad language, no sex, a little mayhem from criminals to make it realistic, but the main characters are definite role models, and teens can really relate to them.
Well, this sounds perfect for Ashley. Where can I find it?
You can get Montooth and the Canfield Witch at MontoothBook.com.
Great. Montooth and the Canfield Witch at MontoothBook.com. Thanks.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin. Focus on
Females. Welcome back. I'm Steve Maskin, and we are tackling celiac disease today with guest expert Dr. Dennis Feldman. And I'm learning some material, too, that I have not been aware of. It's been a while since I went to medical school. And I tell you, it's fascinating how time and time again in medicine, sometimes, you know, we miss the forest from the trees. And one example I want to reintroduce that we talked about in the last block is that of a young woman, say in her 20s and 30s, with iron deficiency anemia and a little bit of bloating, and just given or taking iron supplements, that even that woman may have unrecognized celiac disease or other gastrointestinal problem, and of course this may cause long term issues if not identified. And so would you say, Dennis, that a woman with iron deficiency anemia at some point, with any intestinal or gastrointestinal symptom at some point along the line, should see a gastroenterologist?
I would say that if the person has a persistent problem and has followed a good diet for somebody with irritable bowel syndrome and their symptoms are not resolved and they remain with iron deficiency anemia and their gynecologist doesn't feel that they have excessive menses, then it might be reasonable for them to see a gastroenterologist who could run certain laboratory tests that are specific for celiac disease.
Okay, so that's relatively pain-free. That alone doesn't require scoping, endoscopy, and that almost could be viewed as a screening tool.
Right, right. There is now a whole series of antibody tests done on just a tube of blood that will define patients that are at risk for celiac disease. Now, in the past, there were what were called gliadin antibodies, which were highly unreliable and had a lot of false positivity to them because they could be associated with other conditions. But now, with the advent of what's called the endomycelial antibody and the TTG antibody, the IgA TTG antibody, you can select out patients that are at risk much more efficiently.
So there are two tests that can be run, a screening.
Well, normally they're run as a panel.
I see.
So you know, the physician will, even your primary care physician, family practitioner or internist or your gynecologist could certainly order these tests and see who is at risk. Now, the other thing is that, you know, we were just talking about how people present in a multitude of ways. If somebody's being evaluated for infertility, it would be very important for them to get a celiac disease profile to determine if they're having trouble becoming pregnant because of a occult, more mild form of celiac disease. Interestingly, the husband should also be checked because a male who has mild celiac disease may have sperm that isn't functioning well enough to impregnate their wife.
And how does celiac disease or unrecognized celiac disease, untreated celiac disease, impact a woman's likelihood of getting pregnant?
Fairly substantially. There are a number of, in years past, where we were not as aware of how often celiac disease actually occurs. There have been people that have in the past gone through a multitude of infertility tests that didn't include celiac disease.
So it can affect a number of aspects of getting pregnant, either the implantation, for example, of the embryo. And I know you're not a obstetrician, but evidently it can impact a number of aspects of getting fertile or becoming fertile?
Well, it will affect the ability to become pregnant.
Okay.
It will increase the risk of spontaneous abortion, and it will also impact upon the fact that children that are low for gestational age during development are all features of having celiac disease.
And it just goes to show how complex, really, health is, and that benefits, one of the beauties of Focus on Females is when we have these kind of live, spontaneous discussions, listeners can appreciate just the complexity of how diseases can cross over between areas of subspecialization, and one really needs to keep an open mind and as to if they're having difficulty resolving the issue at hand, keep an open mind, because something that really maybe thought of as outside the box, maybe really the answer to their ongoing problem. And I certainly see that in what I do in treating dry eye. So, we thank our experts every Sunday that come on in and to share some of these important understandings about medical diseases. And on the line is Ann from Tampa. Ann, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi. I only have a minute. I'm in the car with my children, but I had a question for the doctor. My question is, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome a few months ago. I'm almost 43 years old and have four children, and then after my last children were born, they're twins, I had my tubes tied. I'm wondering, I have a lot of perimenopause symptoms. Is there any link between irritable bowel syndrome and perimenopause?
Dennis?
I think that sometimes patients undergoing menopause, which is in the process of a developmental science where we don't understand everything, I think that there is sometimes a heightening of symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome during that perimenopausal period. Why that is, I'm not certain we really know. I know I, in my practice, tend to see that patients who have mild tendencies to constipation in that perimenopausal period tend to have a more severe form of constipation when they're in that perimenopausal period.
And Ian, try to hang in there. We're going to take a break and we'll get right back to you. If you need to cut off, we understand, and maybe you can call right back in a few minutes. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments. Talk Radio, 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Democratic lawmakers are urging Congress to honor the memory of Ted Kennedy by setting aside the angry rhetoric and passing a health care plan that cuts costs and extends coverage. But Republican Orrin Hatch, a close friend of Kennedy's, tells CBS TV there's no Democrat left who can do what Kennedy could in bringing the two sides together. Dick Cheney says the methods that were used against terror suspects in the aftermath of 9/11 were, quote, good policy and directly responsible for the fact there are no similar attacks in the U.S. since then. He's denouncing the Obama administration's Justice Department for investigating whether CIA interrogators abused terror suspects. Pakistani police say an explosion has set several NATO fuel tankers on fire at a backed-up Afghan border crossing. A police officer says he heard the blast and saw three oil tankers, two container trucks, and two dump trucks on fire. More details at SRNnews.com.
The head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, is getting a return engagement.
Led the Fed through one of the worst financial crises that this nation and the world has ever faced.
While the end of the Cash for Clunkers program is leading to a dry spell at car dealers this fall.
They're staying still anyhow because their inventories are so depleted.
And predictions of a swine flu pandemic might lead to a Kleenex shortage.
It will create social turmoil.
Now more than ever, tracking the symptoms of our ailing economy. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Night sweats, hot flashes. Does that sound familiar? I'm Judy Singer. I've been in the natural health field over 25 years, and now I'm in menopause, so my product has to be all natural, and it has to really work. My special formula, Hot Flash Comfort Cream, is an odorless natural cream absorbed quickly through your skin. And no more hot flashes, just comfort. Call 866-711-JUDY, 866-711-5839, or HotFlashComfortCream.com.
When's the last time you witnessed a miracle?
I'm Joy Sutton. I've been a foster parent for 9 years.
When I think of miracles, I think of Michael. He came to me at 3 days old, addicted to crack cocaine and numerous other drugs. Today, he is happy, healthy, right on target for where he should be for any other little four-year-old boy.
When's the last time you were the miracle?
So many people, when they hear that I'm a foster parent, say, how do you do it? Anyone can be a foster parent if you're willing to open your home and your heart to children.
Hillsboro Kids Incorporated can help you make a miracle come true.
You always have someone there to help you answer any questions, to walk you along through every step of the way.
Be part of a miracle. Learn more about what it takes to become a foster parent. Contact Hillsboro Kids Incorporated today. Call 813-643-KIDS, 813-643-KIDS, or visit hillsborokids.org. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Focus. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin. Focus on
Females. And welcome back. And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And we're tackling celiac disease with Dr. Dennis Feldman. Anna, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have another question, or I guess...
I think the doctor mentioned something about when you're in early perimenopause that you can have the constipation. Is that correct, doctor?
Yes, yes. Is that the symptoms you experience?
Yes, very bad.
Uh-huh.
And I had an endoscopy and a colonoscopy back in May. And other than gastritis and IBS, you know, they told me to take, you know, Metamucil twice a day, Miralax once a day, and eat fiber.
Uh-huh.
And doing all that, it's still not helping really
uh-huh.
that much.
Uh-huh.
And I was told about this blood test, that IgM, I think it is, and I'm wondering if I should, you know, go ahead and have that done, because I do think I'm sensitive to things like wheat and gluten and soy and dairy.
I'm saying that there are a whole new level of panels for inflammatory bowel disease. Now, the use of panels for irritable bowel syndrome is a little more controversial, and we as clinicians aren't really knowledgeable in what the impact of having irritable bowel syndrome and the positivity of those tests are. Irritable bowel syndrome is probably a multitude of different illnesses that are linked together. Some of this could be a result of just being perimenopausal. It certainly would be important in this circumstance to have your thyroid function tests done.
That was done.
Okay. It's also important that somebody really go over your amount of fiber in your diet, in that a lot of people come in as patients and say, well, I'm eating enormous amounts of fiber. In reality, they're eating lettuce and tomato and soluble fibers that are not bad for your health, actually beneficial for your health. But it's important that you eat a significant quantity of insoluble fiber, which would be in unprocessed bran if you don't have celiac disease, Metamucil, Citracil, or those products. And normally patients who have a constipation problem have to gradually increase their fiber content to about 35 grams a day, and making sure that they drink a lot of water in their diet. In addition, now the Miralax is a very sensible suggestion, because it's not going to make your intestine lazy, and it adds a kind of an osmotic component to help you evacuate. But it sounds like your physician has looked to some extent for more serious entities, and I would stay in close contact with him and see how these different things help you over time.
Sometimes, gradual increase in fiber? How would you describe that? Is it how many grams per day of fiber increase to the ultimate goal of 35 a day?
Well, I think that a lot of times you recognize that patients have an intolerance if they've been all their lives on a low fiber diet, and suddenly you tell them 2 days later to eat a high fiber diet. Most of those people will have gas, bloating, and distension, and intolerance for all that fiber. They're not experienced with the amount of residue that they really should have in their diet, and that, you know, that is a kind of a slow, gradual progression that they should get used to. Normally, if somebody was eating unprocessed bran, they'd have to eat 4 tablespoons of unprocessed bran to get to 35 grams. I generally tell patients over a 4 to 6 week period of time to take, you know, 1 tablespoon per week and increase it by a tablespoon each week. I wouldn't make them try to increase their fiber too abruptly. The other thing I think that's important is that they make sure that they drink enough water to accommodate that degree of fiber. What's actually happening is that there is actually a change in the microflora of the colon that takes time to develop when you're increasing somebody's fiber content in the diet. And if they are not accustomed to that degree of fiber, they're not going to tolerate it abruptly.
Okay, so then to review, if she gets 4 tablespoons of bran per day, then that would be equate to approximately 35 grams.
Right. Right.
And if she starts, say, with one tablespoon per day, and then every week increases by a tablespoon, and over the course of a month, she'll be at her goal.
Right, right. Now, I would, just because of the focus of today's discussion, I would say that if her symptoms increased with that increase in fiber, certainly she should probably be checked for celiac disease.
And with that, you mentioned, too, the panel. This is a celiac disease panel.
Right.
And so that would be something to consider, too, by your doctor.
Right. Now, I might add that her physician had looked in her upper intestine with an upper endoscopy. In patients with celiac disease, normally you'll see, in mild cases, a mild scalloping of the valves of the small intestine called the valvuli conaventes. There'll be like a scalloping appearance. In more extreme cases, there'll be a fissuring of the small intestine, and in the extreme cases, those valves will be denuded completely. You won't even see them. It'll look like a flat hose.
Do you know, Ann, if your doctor took biopsies from your duodenum?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Do you know if your doctor took any biopsies of your duodenum, of your upper intestine, when he was doing the endoscopy?
Is that the a biopsy of the stomach to see if you have H. pylori?
No, that's actually a different reason for doing that. The reason to do that is if you're having upper intestinal symptoms, there is a high incidence of H. pylori in the stomach of patients that will eventually develop gastritis or ulcer. Or if there is the appearance of gastritis in the stomach, then they will always do a biopsy for H. pylori. There are some cases in which the small bowel can look fairly normal, and if you biopsied it, you may see some very mild evidence of celiac disease. Now, if you've just had an upper endoscopy, I wouldn't recommend that they repeat it, but certainly the panel may be a consideration.
The blood tests. And you may want to check with your gastroenterologist to see if they went ahead and did a biopsy on the duodenum or upper intestine, just to rule out celiac disease as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
We thank you, Ann, and thanks for spending part of your Sunday with us at the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Okay, Dennis, let's talk about other food ingredients besides wheat which can cause celiac disease.
Well, the classic thing is wheat, since that contains the most amount of gluten.
Mm-hmm.
But other grains, such as rye and barley, also contain gluten. And then there's the issue of oats. Oats has apparently a genetically different form of gluten that some patients are sensitive to, but most patients aren't. So it can vary from patient to patient whether they have a tolerance for oats or not. And then entering into the complexity of the issue, a lot of granaries are not attuned to worrying about patients with celiac disease, so they may actually use the granary for wheat in addition to oats, and they may contaminate the oats with the gluten.
So if a patient with known celiac disease looks on a label of a product in the grocery store and it doesn't mention anything about wheat, rye, barley, how confident is she or should she be that there is there's no trace of anything in that food which could upset her balance?
Actually, that will be pretty unreliable because the other thing that we didn't mention at this point were a lot of processed foods have wheat in them as food extenders. So there may be, wheat in matzo ball soup, or there may be wheat in tomato sauce or ketchup. A lot of processed foods have gluten in them. Patients who have celiac disease generally should see a medical dietitian, and there are also some very extensive websites now out that can protect patients from getting gluten into their diet without their recognizing it. In other words, these can be very compliant patients who are unaware that they're still getting gluten in their diet, and dietitians are very attuned to those foods. In addition, there are certain health food stores that particularly dedicate themselves to the patient with celiac disease. That's actually a fortunate thing because this is, in most cases, a illness in which you don't necessarily have to go to the pharmacy to be managed. You can be managed by appropriate diet and the input of a dietitian or a website that can give you not only the foods that you should and should not eat, but recipes that you can do that will prevent you from having the disease progress.
If something that says gluten-free on it, is that safe?
I think that it's probably wise to be pretty compulsive about it, but I think generally if it would say gluten-free, it probably is gluten-free.
And again, at this moment, I'd like to remind everybody to call in at 289-1860, 289-1860 outside of Hillsborough County. We're at 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. And let's talk a little bit about the other comorbid or other conditions that occur in the setting of celiac disease. And one in particular we talked on the break that we haven't mentioned yet is a skin condition.
Oh, yes. Dermatitis herpetiformis is a very common skin condition that people with celiac disease will present with. It's a very itchy lesion that causes blistering and is found on the arms and trunk. And if the dermatologist sees you with this condition, he'll normally do a biopsy and he'll be able to make a diagnosis of dermatitis herpetiformis. The association of this skin rash with celiac disease is exceedingly high. And if that is biopsy proven, then the celiac blood panel can be done by the dermatologist or the treating physician. And if the celiac disease profile is positive, then the patient should be put on a gluten-free diet, even if they don't have a small bowel biopsy. Now, it will take a certain amount of time for a gluten-free diet to relieve that rash, but the dermatologist frequently prescribes a medication called Dapsone that can alleviate the rash pretty promptly, and then by maintaining themselves on the gluten-free diet, the rash and other more silent illnesses that are proceeding in the face of celiac disease could be averted.
Excellent. Okay, we'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. It's Celiac Disease Day. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Focus. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin. Focus on Females.
And welcome back. And before we get into this last block, I'd like to share with everybody, number one, Dr. Feldman's office phone number, where if you're looking for direction and need help and like a second opinion or his input, that would be area code 813-972-2324. And Dennis also shared with me a few websites which you can go to find more information about celiac disease. Let's run through these. Celiac, celiac.org. The second is csacelias.org. So that's csacelias.org. The next is celiac.com, celiac.com. And the final one that he has for us is glutenfree.com. So glutenfree.com. The other thing before we run out of time, I want to make sure we go over, is the overarching approach to a patient with celiac disease. I think it's an acronym.
Yes. Because it's an illness that frequently can be treated by the patient themselves, this acronym celiac applies, which includes consultation with a skilled dietitian, E for education about the disease, L, lifelong adherence to a gluten-free diet, I, identification and treatment of nutritional deficiencies, A, access to an advocacy group, which would be the websites that we just provided you with, and C, continuous long-term follow-up by a multidisciplinary team. That becomes available to us from a article in the UpToDate.com website, Management of Celiac Disease in Adults.
Excellent. And let's talk about some of the associated problems. We mentioned dermatitis herpetiformis. Early in the show, we mentioned a few other comorbid conditions in celiac disease. But let's spend a little bit more time with those. You mentioned type 1 diabetes mellitus.
Yes, it appears that there is an association between patients who have celiac disease and due to some sort of autoimmune effect on the pancreas can progress to type 1 diabetes mellitus.
Now, does that mean that all patients with type 1 diabetes should be evaluated for celiac disease?
These are interesting questions. I don't know the impact of all of this in the sense that we now know that there are patients with a lot of rheumatological and autoimmune conditions that if you check them incidentally, you find insidious celiac disease. And that includes patients with type 1 diabetes mellitus, patients with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, patients with Graves' disease, patients with what's called autoimmune hepatitis, which is also much more common in women than men. These are patients that sometimes have mild elevation in liver function tests for several years before they are truly recognized to have autoimmune hepatitis. Even Sjogren's syndrome, which you see in patients with dry eyes, could have underlying celiac disease.
So my sense is that no one's yet done a study looking at these patients, say, with type 1 diabetes mellitus and try to withdraw gluten from their diet and just to see what happens.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, if I had type 1 diabetes, I would do that.
Yeah. I think that some of these illnesses, unfortunately, progress to a point where you can't regress the disease that's been established, but there is an association between having celiac disease that has been previously unrecognized that has resulted in these autoimmune reactions.
That's fascinating. And I guess it's easily evaluated now with the serology tests that are fairly reliable.
Yes, I think that what we do in most cases is when we are suspicious or inclined to do the test, and frequently we do these tests in the more milder cases because those are the ones that are harder to establish as to is this a functional symptom or is this celiac disease. If they have a positive serology, in other words, their TTG test is positive, then they should probably be referred to the gastroenterologist who would do an upper endoscopy, and do a small bowel biopsy. Now, the small bowel biopsy, sometimes the distribution of the disease is a little bit patchy, so the doctor needs to do about 5 biopsies in order to confirm a diagnosis. But one of the good aspects of the disease is the sense that the gliadin and gluten is in the highest quantity when it reaches the proximal small intestine, and as a result, the disease manifests itself high up in the small intestine. Therefore, the biopsies that don't require going down too far can frequently establish the diagnosis. Interestingly, that's why iron deficiency anemia is one of the most common symptoms of this illness, because iron is absorbed in the more proximal small bowel.
Okay. Well, excellent. And that could certainly potentially make an impact to identify unrecognized occult celiac disease in these patients. And again, you mentioned infertility earlier in the show as another potential complication or difficulty in patients with celiac disease. And the other things we mentioned earlier is the osteoporosis.
Right, right.
And there the parathyroid gland gets involved as well, correct?
Well, that's true. In other words, patients with osteopenia and osteoporosis have a decrease in their bone matrix, and that's due to some of the micronutrients, zinc, iron, and other nutrients that are necessary for a good bone matrix. But these patients also have a problem with calcium absorption and vitamin D malnutrition, and as a result, they can develop osteomalacia, and that is a risk for bone fractures and other problems with the bones.
Now, tell me, is there a reason why patients with celiac disease may not respond to a gluten-free diet?
Well, there are actually several reasons. Some of these people could be misdiagnosed. Other illnesses can behave very much like celiac disease. There's a condition called tropical spoo, where people can come from jungle-like areas and have diarrhea very similar to celiac disease. Lymphoma of the small intestine can actually present very similarly to celiac disease. Patients with either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease can have symptoms very similar to celiac disease. There are a few instances in which patients can respond to a gluten-free diet, and as the disease progresses, because they have a more severe form, they can have what's called refractory celiac disease, in which the illness doesn't respond anymore solely to gluten restriction. Those patients sometimes require steroids or other immunosuppressants, medications used similarly in inflammatory bowel disease to treat their disease. Some patients can develop what's called collagenous spoo, where they develop a scarring of the small intestine, and they will not respond to a gluten-free diet exclusively.
So I guess the message here is, if you have a diagnosis of celiac disease and your things are going well, if things change, don't get concerned that, well, maybe, you know, the celiac disease was never at fault in the first place. There may be an additional issue going on, and to stay optimistic and to continue to manage and have your condition further evaluated for what concomitant or other problem may exist along with the celiac disease.
That's all very true.
Okay, I'd like to thank everybody for listening today. I'd like to especially thank my guest expert, Dr. Dennis Feldman, as we've reviewed celiac disease today. And again, I encourage everybody to submit on the website other medical topics you're interested in hearing about. This is Dr. Steve Maskin saying have a great week, and we'll see you next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.